Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 365, recorded on Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And Florence Ion is out this week. We've got a rotating chair in Florence's place. None other than Miriam Jouar. How you doing, Miriam?
Hello.
Tank Girl is back.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
Done. Good.
Dun, dun, dun.
How you been? How you been surviving these weeks of... I feel like there's been like a lot of hardware news and then no hardware news and all that kind of stuff. And you're kind of all about hardware.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think there's been some steady, you know...
Trickling new stuff.
I think the P20 we should talk about because I think it's a pretty significant phone, even though we can't get it in the U.S. And if we do, we'll probably go to jail.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, like, you know, there's stuff coming up, like OnePlus 6. We've got like the G7. I think it's a lull, but I don't think it's that much of a lull because if I look at, you know, when I got devices, it's been at least every 2 weeks since MWC.
Well, that's true.
It was pretty busy before MWC, but
right.
You know.
Yeah, I just feel like with the show coming up with stuff to talk about, from a news perspective, has been kind of hard. So
it's been quiet.
Right.
It definitely been quiet.
It's been a little quiet. This week is not quiet. However, this week was the first week in quite a few weeks where, like, I opened up the dock and I knew immediately. Like, I put in the maybes that I had been collecting throughout the week, and bam, it was filled.
It's
and
funny
I couldn't
because
fit it all.
I did the show notes for my show tomorrow. And it's the same thing. I was like, holy crap, we have a lot of stuff to talk about.
Awesome. And this is like practice for you. Remind people about your show and where they can find it.
MobileTechPodcast.com. And it's a podcast. It's audio only. It's every week. It's towards the end of the week it gets published. It's me and a guest. You've been on it.
Yeah.
Ron, I need to have you on, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Hit me up.
And then I'll ping you soon. And then, so you check it out. MobileTechPodcast.com. There it is.
Fantastic hair in that photo.
Yeah, it's kind of this funny photo that I was at a Lexus event. It was just like the last month I worked at Engadget. I was at a Lexus event in Las Vegas, and I had Google Glass, and I had a Pebble smartwatch, and I had a HTC M7 Mini.
Okay.
One M7 Mini.
Okay.
And it was like, that's like the most decked out tech moment I had. And the Lexus photographer captured this shot. And like it was really windy, and my hair just kind of flew in the sky like that. It was a really awesome shot. In retrospect, it looks a little douchey with the Google Glass, but at the same time, I was like, you know, I'll go with it.
Google Glass is definitely, when you see pictures now, it's definitely a moment in time
sort of
accessory.
It's a good gadgety picture of me. It represents well what I do on the podcast. I talk about tech, right?
Absolutely. We're going to talk about tech today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to be discussing the big ZTE SmackDown event that's been happening over the week. Some news on hidden security updates that everybody seemed to find very interesting late last week. Android P navigation changes apparently are happening coming soon. The Huawei P20 and P20 Pro, which Miriam, you have with you, so we're going to show that off. Miriam dropped some pretty big hints pre-show about how amazing the camera is on that, so we're definitely going to dive into that. Sony Xperia XZ2 Premium or XZ2 Premium, depending on where you are in the world. Mm-hmm. Gmail redesign, and what does that mean for inbox, and a whole lot more. But first, we can't do any of this without the help of Victor leading us into the news.
This match missed out on WrestleMania for this year, but we'll have to settle for Tuesday night SmackDown on Android News.
It's the Tuesday night SmackDown!
That is awesome.
I like it. By the way, I'm speaking of wrestling, are you a wrestling fan, Victor?
My son became a huge wrestling fan the past few years. So
you're engulfed in it. Okay. I've been watching that Netflix wrestling series. What is it called? Glow?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Glow was great. Glow was a blast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Totally unrelated to anything we talk about on this show, but you should
watch it. Based on a true story. But.
Yeah, based on Mark Maron. Mark Maron in a rare acting as himself in a good role. So
totally. No, he's great in that show. All right, news that has something to do with Android. Ron, you got the top story.
Yes, well, speaking of SmackDowns, so ZTE is now in the U.S. government's crosshairs. And so this is similar to what we saw recently with Huawei. ZTE has been hit with a 7-year export ban by the U.S. government. And that's a consequence of, quote, misleading the Department of Commerce, unquote, after not holding up its end of the bargain after a plea deal struck last year involving trade sanctions to Iran and North Korea. So pretty geopolitical stuff and pretty big, you know, kind of move by the U.S. government in terms of hitting ZTE for misleading them. And so to you, the average consumer, what does this mean? It means that all U.S. companies are prohibited from exporting goods to be used in ZTE products for 7 years. So that means no Qualcomm chips in ZTE devices.
Wow.
And the ZTE Axon 9, which is the sequel to the Axon 7, don't ask about 8. Was set to use the Qualcomm chipset. So now the open question is: do they settle for a MediaTek in a flagship, or do they try to make a deal with third parties like Huawei, Samsung, or Xiaomi? It's estimated that 25 to 30% of all components in ZTE smartphones originated from the U.S. And then to make things even more complicated, they're also barred from using U.S. software. So that's a big question about what that means for Android.
Yeah.
Certainly it seems to mean that Google Play services can't be used. So that's got to – being an Android device is going to be real hard without Google Play services or Android itself. Interestingly enough, they can still sell products in the U.S., which is kind of odd. And earlier this year, the U.S. government banned ZTE devices for use by government contractors due to those concerns. So what is this – you know, Miriam, you're probably right at the edge of this. What does this do to ZTE as a company?
They're screwed.
How do you recover from this?
This is actually interesting because we should talk – I mean, Huawei is in the same boat.
Yeah.
Not quite as bad, obviously, because they – I mean, technically are not banned from using U.S. tech, right? But like for ZTE, I mean, the only reason they were here and had a presence here and did kind of okay was because they use Qualcomm Snapdragon chips. Of course, they use Android. And so I'm not quite sure how they can recover from this, at least on the U.S. soil, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's stopping them from using – technically, they're not supposed to, but it's open source, so nobody can stop them from using Android abroad.
Right. That was one of my questions, is Android totally out?
And they can use MediaTek all day long, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll be fine abroad, I think. But yeah, they're definitely not getting Qualcomm chips on their phones for 7 years.
Well, and I mean, when you're talking about a flagship phone, are there flagship devices that are running MediaTek processors? Or and we're just not used to seeing them because Snapdragon's such a big
deal over
here.
Not the question is not that. The question is there a processor from MediaTek that can compete with Snapdragon 845,
right.
Exynos, and maybe Kirin's 970? Not really.
And I mean, Huawei is not letting others into the Kirin chipset, right? That's
exactly,
just there.
Like Exynos,
same with Samsung.
Right? Yeah,
they're not doing that with Exynos.
So I think MediaTek is working really hard to be legit and to be able to compete with Qualcomm at the high end. So I think some of the newest Helio chips are probably coming close to matching the 835, but we're not quite at 845 level yet. And, you know, there are a bunch of phones primarily sold in India and China that have the newest and greatest MediaTek chipsets.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other problem is that MediaTek doesn't quite have the software IP to provide to match what Qualcomm can offer. Like, Qualcomm doesn't just sell their chips. They sell the manufacturers an entire solution, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get like the ISP and the software for the ISP and all that other good stuff that makes a phone perform better, right? And MediaTek is starting to do that, but I don't think that their ISP software can compete with, you know, Qualcomm's
right.
yet. So there's not, I mean, look, if you look at the Axon 7, maybe, you know, phones like that will never happen again from, at least in the US, from ZTE, but for the rest of the world, I think phones like the Blade V8 Pro we saw last year and the Blade V9 that we saw at MWC, those phones could, you know, in the mid-range $200 price point, you can make a really decent phone with a MediaTek chipset that's competitive. It's just that how are they going to sell it here, right? Because
right.
they can't sell Android phones now that Android is US, technically US software.
Well, I mean, that's I guess a big question is because, I mean, obviously, they can't from what this from what these sanctions imply. They can't use Google Play services, so
right.
all of Google's suite of apps. They could use Google open source, right? Because it's open source. Just because it was began with, you know, with a U.S. company doesn't necessarily mean
I'm not
the
sure
OS
that,
is U.S.
I'm not
software.
Sure the government sees it that way, though.
That's my question.
I mean, look, the reality is this. We're living in a time where the regime running this country right now is so messed up that
yeah.
Huawei was asked to pull their phone. I mean, AT&T and Verizon, put themselves in their shoes, right? They don't need Huawei. They have Samsung. They have Apple. They have LG maybe, right? They have Google Pixel to sell, at least Verizon does. Like, why would they even need Huawei? I mean, it'd be nice for the customers to have the option, but they can live without it. So imagine all this political turmoil is happening and somebody comes along and says, if you do this, we're going to make your lives difficult as a carrier in the U.S. Of course they pulled out.
Yeah.
Right? But it shows you how, you know, that right now there's no substantial evidence that Huawei has done anything wrong in their phones, has put any spyware in their phones, right? So until proven otherwise, I don't think they're guilty. And it's kind of silly that what's happening is happening. Now, ZTE clearly messed things up. You know, they clearly did not abide by the rules that they agreed to abide by.
Yeah, and so, that's why they're paying.
So I hate to say this, but screw them. Like, you know, like you gotta be, you know, this is not the Wild West anymore. We have some rules to follow. Now, it's just a bummer though, because ZTE doesn't really matter that much, but I think for Huawei, I mean, they're number three right now or something, right? And their phones are really showing it. Like, they're so good. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, we're not gonna be able to have these phones for four years, five years, whatever, till whatever things get reversed there, right? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I think it's crazy that we live in a country where, you know, based on unsubstantiated evidence, the authorities are you know, kind of blasting these companies just because of protectionism, really, is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
Who's gonna be next? Samsung? Like, seriously?
Yeah, right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, where do you end this? Well, it's China, really, but come on, like, you know. Like, I don't know. It's just silly to me.
And it's kind of a tease forward, because you do have some pretty, you know, interesting Huawei devices that we'll talk about in hardware. We got some other news stories before we get there, like something to do with security on your phones, pretty important stuff. What do you do if you're an OEM and you don't actually update phones with the latest security updates, but you want it to seem like you do? You misrepresent it through the OS, apparently. Wired cited a security research lab researchers who spent 2 years analyzing Android security updates and how they line up with device patch admissions on the phone, as far as, like, yes, you're up to this level. Well, were all the patches that were part of those previous levels that you're supposedly up to, were they actually included and are they represented on your device? Well, the report showed how many vendors would not install a patch but yet still change the patch date forward several months in many cases to reflect that it's more up to date than it actually is. They studied 1,200 devices from all major brands. Obviously, the Pixel devices were free and clear. I think there was none of this going on with the Pixel devices. Everyone else was guilty to some degree. Google did reiterate that, you know, uncertified devices could be a part of the results, which, you know, would make sense. They're held to a lower security standard. Each update, like I said, has a number of patches. So they say it's possible that some patches are accidentally missing from updates, or that certain chipsets might be the reason why certain patches are or are not applied, yet that date still carries forward. But there's really no way for the user to know that. They just look at the date. It says you're up to date from a security patch perspective. And then, you know, of course you're going to assume that you're up to date because it tells you that in the OS.
That concerns me and worries me. It's kind of shady.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we can do about it. I mean, it's up there with this. You know, I don't know, I've been saying, not on your show because I haven't been here since last year, but this year I've been really pushing hard on my show that as journalists, we should be completely intolerant of manufacturers that don't supply updates, at least security updates, in within a month. And I say new OS updates within three, right? And I'm going to hold them accountable to that. And if they're doing this kind of BS about, you know, faking the update dates and version numbers, I think that's, we should really nail them to the cross. I
mean, absolutely.
This is the biggest problem with Android. If you look at what we have today, all our phones are awesome. Whether we buy a low-end phone, a mid-ranger, or a high-end phone, we're getting really great hardware. Hardware is becoming a commodity. It's all about the software. So let's get that software out there updated in a timely manner.
Yeah. What do you think, Ron? How do you feel
surprised.
About this?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think if anything, what we've learned in any capacity, companies will figure out ways to cut corners. mm-hmm. right? And they'll figure out ways to manipulate systems, and they'll figure out ways to do all this sort of stuff. So, like, I'm not surprised. And Miriam, I agree with you that we need to hold them accountable, and we need to be, you know, kind of, you know, not really, you know, tolerate it. But at the same time, we going back to the ZTE thing, we live in a world of no consequences.
Yeah.
You know, really, what recourse do you have? It's like, I feel like this is the one thing that regular users are most powerless against. You know, your only choice
I think the recourse is that those people, at least on this show who are listening to and watching this show, can vote with their wallet.
Right.
Buy a Pixel. That, yeah. Don't buy a Galaxy S9. I'm sorry to say that. It's a good phone. Mm-hmm. I would even say don't buy a P20, because even though it's a phenomenal phone, as we'll see, the software is a total disaster, as usual, because it's super skinned and everything. It is running 8.1, mind you. But the point I'm making is it's going to be running 8.1 for the entire life of the device, probably.
Right.
So
not great later.
Ultimately, it doesn't matter if the Pixel costs too much. Buy OnePlus if the KISS Pixel costs too much. You know that the OnePlus, at least, is getting updated.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about, though, is an awareness of what all these companies, you know, what their security practices are, their update schedules. And when you're talking about Android with as many OEMs as there are that exist in the world, that's really hard for the majority, you know, for like 99% of Android users to do, you know.
And I know
if they're listening or watching the shows like these.
And that's why we need to hold these companies accountable as journalists, because the majority of people won't know. In the same way as the majority of people still buy phones locked to their carrier in their carrier stores. Yeah. I know people who are phone enthusiasts that still buy a phone to carrier store because BOGO or whatever, right?
Yeah, because you get a good deal.
And because they have a family plan. I'm not blaming you guys. I'm just saying, like, when you make that decision, you're messing with what we're trying to achieve here.
That's a signal.
You've got to think about that.
Yeah.
It's like, I know that it's not easy and you have to pay more money, but the reality is you have to think about it. Like, if you continue supporting what the carriers are doing, the carriers are not invested in updating these devices.
Yeah.
So don't buy carrier devices.
Yeah. And just real quick here, an app called Snoop Snitch is a way to check on this. 9to5 Google has instructions on checking your own device. You download the app, run Android patch level test, then you can analyze the results, and it'll basically let you know if, you know, from an individual patch standpoint, if your phone represents those patches that would make up the patch level that your phone says you are at. So that's an app to check out. Ron, you got the next story.
Yeah. So one of the nice things, despite it being a slow news cycle, we do, it seems like, weekly get an update on Android P as more stuff is being leaked out through the developer previews and other things like that. And as we started the week, I saw the blustery, clickbaity headlines that Android P will feature iPhone X-style navigation gestures. Which any reason to get us all up in arms. But so the details on this is that Google published a blog before we get to the gestures, on Android P's private DNS feature. And a screenshot attached showed a new navigation method that first implied gesture navigation similar to the iPhone X. But as it turns out, there's always a but, it's a bit different. So the home button would be an oblong pill shape, and you tap the pill button to go home or swipe up on the pill button for multitasking. That means the extra multitasking button would be gone. Multitasking screen would be a left-right scroll with a swipe up to dismiss a card. So I'm not as familiar with the iPhone X. I don't know how exactly similar to this will be, but this seems like a evolution of what's already existing in Android right now, right? They just figured out a way to make it a little more intuitive. They're evolving that concept.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? No. Or am I misreading this?
So how it's different on iPhone X, obviously there is no physical home button on the iPhone X. So if you're in an app and you want to go home, you swipe up from the bottom and that takes you to your home. This is a little different. This seems to be, if you want to go home, you tap the button the way we're used to tapping a home button. If you want to pull up your multitasking menu, normally we would tap a different button. Instead, we swipe up and that takes you to your multitasking navigation that's now a horizontal
plane. Is back right to left
but it still seems to represent a back button based on the screenshot that they posted.
So this is like a comparison,
top is current, bottom is
interesting
from the screenshot. Now Google updated their blog entry or that post entry with a new photo that omitted the navigation stuff. So it's obviously something that they didn't intend to go out there, and it was this initially, and then they trimmed it down. So
I mean, it's hard to get rid of the back button because that's the staple of Android. In fact, it's one of the things I love about Android, because on an iPhone, it's, you never know where the back button is going to be in an app.
Yeah, oh, it's so true. Right? It's so true.
But I have to say, here's the thing. I bought an iPhone 10 shortly after I saw you guys last in the fall, when the winter, I guess. And you know, I bought it because I feel it's the most significant iPhone in many years. So I wanted to try it out. And I have to say, the gesture stuff is absolutely phenomenal.
I agree.
I love it. I want it so hard on Android. I cannot even, when I go back to an iOS device now, like an iPad that has a home button, I get frustrated. Like, I just don't want, I never liked the home button, but now I really don't like the home button now that I've experienced what they can do. The only thing that I find is a bummer on the iPhone 10 in terms of gestures is the swipe up to dismiss the cards. You know, they removed that from the normal iPhone. So now you actually have to like hold one of the screens, and then you get a little X at the top left corner and you can dismiss each of them. It's
no good.
I mean, the Pre had it right? And in many ways, the iPhone 10 copies the Pre. But the Pre had the cards you could dismiss by swiping them up further. And that's just so natural. So I'm really hoping that eventually Android gets the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Because we always do things right in Android, don't we?
Eventually.
Yeah.
Sooner or later. It does take us a while to get there. Okay, so we got a ton of email this week. And it's good. It's good news. We got tons of email from people who were so like excited, interested, adding extra context to our music discussion last week.
That's great, Ron.
That was your idea to do the exhaustive comparison of music apps, and
it was collaborative.
Awesome work.
It came up as we're doing the show, and it's good to. I really do find it's good to take a step back from the the week to week, day to day grind of all the news that we cover to look at a category in detail and kind of see how it's evolved and changed. And all the when you said a couple of days ago that we got a ton of feedback from the show, I was like, going through it, it's great to see. It's the added color that we either didn't have time for or there's perspective we didn't have.
Yep.
And so I love that so many people responded with their opinions. That's awesome.
To the point to where it was really hard for me to pick emails for the show because there were so many, but they're really great points. So we're going to do our best to read a few more emails and maybe add a little less context because you guys are really just adding context to what we already talked about. So I'm going to run through these just real quick here. Mike wrote in to say, Ron, I love you, but I was listening to the podcast using Google Music podcast feature you said no one uses. I actually like the function because you can specify per podcast to auto-download most recent 3 episodes and notify you when those new episodes show up. This can all be done via Wi-Fi. So when I start my commute and play my most recent All About Android episode, I know I'm not using data. And also likes the new release radio and new releases tab. And there you go. That's a great kind of reason to use that. I mean, I'm sure other podcast apps also allow you to do that, but everybody finds the one that works for them.
And it's funny because Mike, I love that you chimed in like that. A couple other people also chimed in saying how that they use Google Music for their podcast, and that's great. I've seen data not only from my own podcast but other podcasters, and I've compared notes, and the statistical relevance of podcast listeners on Google Play Music is very insignificant compared to the players. That's the basis of my comment.
Yeah.
Sure, there's some people who use it, and it's no surprise that folks who listen to the show use it because we're all very loyal to Google use Google Play Music because it's a great deal and it was all that sort of stuff, so it makes sense. But a great example of why Google Play Music is such a challenge is because that's a great feature that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, right.
They've buried some great stuff in this monster of Google Play Music, and they're not even highlighting what you can do with podcasts. So that's my challenge.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I mean, if I look,
might not even know that it's there.
If I look at my podcast, it's like something like 70% of my listeners are on Pocket Casts. Yeah. 70.
Well, Pocket Casts is
it's
at least
insane.
Pocket Casts is dominant.
I mean, I love Pocket. I'm just saying, like, it's like if you want a standard, there's your standard.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's like it's like I'll go. I mean, I'm wondering. We just moved. Podcast host for iFanboy, and they give us more detailed, and I can try to find the breakdown, but PocketCast is strong, but iTunes for a non-tech, non-Android audience, Apple Podcasts and iTunes is still insanely dominant.
Yeah. Yep. That makes a lot of sense.
It's interesting because I got like some not insignificant percentages, like over 10% of people using iTunes, like the mobile iTunes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, They're in denial about their iPhones. They're about to buy an Android phone. Well, that's how I know, right? Because, I mean, why would you listen to my podcast, which is primarily Android?
Because, on an
iOS device. Maybe it's an iPad.
We have that on this
iPads,
show, too.
iPads.
Could be.
Come on. Android tablet. The state of Android tablets is a sad state.
It is. It is.
So yeah, what's up, Ron? We've discussed that. No, I just ran the report on podcast platforms on that podcast for iFanboy, and it's 39% Apple Core Media, 25% iTunes, 7% web players, 4% Overcast, 3.6 Pocket Cast, 3.5 Stitcher. Yeah, I mean, it's dominant. It's crazy. Podcast metrics are crazy. Anyway, all right, next email.
Michael wrote in, I love this, as an elderly millennial, 1982, I have to defend YouTube Music for feeding the nostalgia for MTV and Much Music, and to a lesser extent VH1. Seeing new music videos next to Buggles or Nina is kind of cool. Now, to pile on the hate for Google Play Music, it is my primary music subscription. I pay the $9.99 for it and commercial-free YouTube. I upload my library of Annie DeFranco albums, but podcasts are the worst. If I start AAA on my commute home or on my commute to work, then try to resume on the way home, Google Play Music resets to the beginning and I'm trying to skip ahead 40 to 45 minutes. Assistant integration makes this experience worse. If I tell Google Play Music to play All About Android, it's hit or miss on what episode will come up with, what episode will come back with, or where in that episode it will be. Beyond Pod is where all my podcasts are listened to now. So, whew, there you go.
Nice.
More perspective.
It is.
All right. We'll read more emails a little bit later because we've got a lot more to jam in there if we have the time for it. But it's time for some hardware. We've already talked around it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
The Huawei P20 and P20 Pro.
Look, it's interesting because this phone, you know, if you talk to most of the mainstream, like, I shouldn't say mainstream, the very, very kind of like popular tech journalists, like, you know, the folks who write at Engadget, The Verge, mm-hmm. TechCrunch, CNET, we're all in agreement this phone is just like blowing our minds. And unfortunately, you know, technically, first of all, it's never going to come to the US.
Yeah, it was supposed to.
It was supposed to. Well, actually, we're not even sure of that. The Mate 10 came to the US. The Mate 10 Pro came to the US. It was supposed to come to the carriers. It didn't come. But the Mate 10 Pro came to Best Buy and Amazon, and then Best Buy booted it. Because Best Buy got probably threatened as well somehow.
Yeah. Felt the
but
heat.
The bottom line is I think the P20, there was no, I don't think it was ever intended to come to the US. It's just that we from the beginning of hearing rumors, we knew that there was going to be a triple camera on the Pro version. And that really intrigued a lot of us who are into imaging, right? The most logical thing, if you look at Huawei's phones, traditionally they've had two sensors, one monochrome, one color. And the monochrome, it can gather more light because it doesn't have to divide into RGB, right? Mm-hmm. And so you get basically really, really high quality, lots of detail and really good dynamic range from the monochrome. And with computational photography, you can combine it with a color and you get really great color photos, right? That's kind of the idea. They've done mm-hmm. that since the P9, the Mate 9, and then the P10 and P10 Plus last year, and the Mate 10 and 10 Pro.
It's and what they've improved,
they've,
for them.
And they've added OIS and they've added f/1.6 on their lenses. So they're getting better and better and better. And with the P20, they've gone a completely radically different route. Well, I wouldn't say it's radically different, but it's definitely quite a bit different. Let me bring up, you've seen this stuff on the screen, but maybe let me bring this up here if you can. So as you can see here, there's three lenses, right? You've got a 20 megapixel f/1.6 down here. You've got a 40 megapixel f/1.8, and you've got a 3x optical zoom f/2.4. That's 8 megapixel. And that one has OIS. Technically, according to iFixit, all three of them physically have OIS, but it's only active on the zoom lens for some reason. And the reason,
there's some reason
that it does what they call AIS, artificial intelligence stabilization.
Basically,
it uses machine learning to detect the motion of your hand, and it's not just using the gyro, it's actually like feeding it into an algorithm that can predict ahead of time how your hand is going to move, and it's kind of insane how well it works. They have a dedicated low light mode on this phone. I sent, by the way, you might want to bring them up. I sent you some photos by email, so maybe you can bring them up since you're connected via HDMI or whatever. I don't know if you are connected by HDMI. Do you got them?
No, I will work on these. Okay. So you talk
but,
about
but
it.
But my
work
point
on these.
Is that you should look at these because there you go. So this is a low light shot. This is a standard low light shot in auto mode with the P20 Pro, and look at the level of detail here, and don't tell me this blows away the Pixel 2. And I didn't do a comparison with the Pixel 2, but I know the neighborhood. It's my neighborhood, and it's insane. I mean, it's totally insane. The dynamic range is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it looks really
the
nice.
Detail is amazing, and this is no OIS, so it's using their AI stabilization. The other thing that's interesting, if you bring up some of the other photos, if you bring up one of the bicycles through the window, I don't know if you saw that one. There you go. So that one, there's no way you can get that shot in auto mode because it's so dark there. That was one of those long, low light, long exposure in the low light mode. It's up to 4 seconds. And as you can see, 4 second exposure with no blur whatsoever, handheld, no tripod needed. That's what AIS does. Now you're going to say, why the 40 megapixels? That seems like a lot of pixels, small pixels. Well, the sensor is is actually a 1/1.7-inch sensor. It's a massive sensor. And if you combine the pixels, the output of that 40 megapixels is actually not 40. You can set it to 40, but you lose all the AI advantages of the computational stuff. But if you leave it at default, it outputs 10 megapixels and it bins 4 nearby pixels into one giant pixel. And that effective giant pixel is instead of like being 1.55 or 1.4 micron, it's 2 microns. If you remember the HTC One M7, it had 2 micron pixels, mm-hmm. but only 4 megapixels worth, right? So now you have 10 megapixel worth of... Right. So that with a fast lens combined with a monochrome sensor gives you this incredible light performance. This thing just completely obliterates everything. DxOMark is 109 on it. And you know, usually I don't care about DxOMark. I kind of laugh at DxOMark, but this time I believe it. This is how good HDR is on this phone. Look at it. The sun was glaring right into the lens here.
Yeah.
And you
that
see
would,
a bit
that
of,
would blast
you know,
it out without,
you,
yeah.
You see a bit, you see that, you know, there are still some dark spaces, some lights. I mean, this is insane. And then, you know, if you keep going, there's some zoom fixtures. So this is just a nice photo of the ice cream bar in Noe Valley. And you can
really
look,
nice.
If you look at the dynamic range, the outside is really dark, right? You're outside, this is not daytime. This is at night. So we're looking at street light level of light. And you look inside and nothing's overblown on the inside.
Hmm. Wow.
So, I mean, look at this. You can keep going. You probably read the menu. So if you bring up the photo of the lagoon, that's a 3x optical zoom photo. And so keep zooming in and you'll see like it's just ripe with detail. Yeah.
Yeah, you start to see a little of that crunchiness.
Start to see a little bit, but I mean
at that point, but
it's kind of amazing.
It also can
combine the 3x zoom with a digital zoom and some AI using that massive 40 megapixel sensor,
mm-hmm.
and you can do up to what they call it 5x lossless zoom. So basically the equivalent of just, you know, pixel for pixel up to 5x. So that's what this phone brings to the table. In terms of imaging, in every other capacity, is a totally legit flagship. It has, if you can bring the camera back here, I'll show you guys. There's an AMOLED panel. It's 6.1 inches. There's strangely a fingerprint sensor in the front, which I think is kind of silly, and kind of gives it a bit of an old school look, even though
isn't that funny that now the fingerprint is an old school look.
But you got that notch in the top, and here's the best part about the notch. Let me show you. You can actually turn the notch off. And this is where I wanted to talk about the notch, because I don't have a problem with notches, especially when they're implemented like this. Now, do you see carefully what happened here?
Yeah.
You don't see the notch anymore, but the notch is still physically being used by putting the battery icon and the reception icons in it.
That's the way to do
it. So it's really smart, right?
That looks really nice. I mean, you wouldn't even know the difference.
So this is an AMOLED panel. It's 1080p, so that's typical Huawei. They haven't gone the Quad HD route. They've done it on a few of their phones, but not too many of them.
Yeah, but is it necessary?
Do you really need it? No, yeah, right? Yeah. Here's the other thing. 4,000 milliamp hour battery. This thing lasts, no kidding, 2 days. Not a problem. And it has a Kirin 970, which is, you know, their highest end chip. It's about the same as an 835. In some ways better, but in some ways not as good as an 845. 6 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage. There's unfortunately no SD card on this one, but dual SIM, and it does have IP68 water resistance. Also, no headphone jack. You can see there's USB-C here, but no headphone jack anywhere. But there's an IR blaster if you have a television or something you
very
want to
very nice. That proves to you that it's not a phone meant for the US market.
Yeah, you know, and the dual SIM as well. But here's the lovely thing about it. It supports all the bands.
Yeah.
Which means you could use it on AT&T and T-Mobile in the US without any issues whatsoever. The black one I have is, yeah, the black one I have is not the most pretty one. If you, I don't know if you can bring it up, Victor, but there is one called Twilight. It starts green and it moves over to a blue hue in the back glass. This is a glass sandwich phone. So I don't know if you see it on the website there, Victor.
Glass sandwich.
But it's basically that one. Yeah. See, so that's called Twilight. That's the one I wanted them to send me, but I guess they ran out. And then this is the P20 Pro. Now there's a P20 as well. And the P20 is here if you want to bring up the camera. That one looks very similar, right?
Yeah.
Except that in the back is dual camera, so it's missing the zoom.
Oh, only two cameras.
Yeah, it's missing the zoom, and instead of a 40 megapixel sensor that interpolates down to, you know, 10 megapixel with 2 micron pixels, mm-hmm. it's a 12 megapixel 1.55 micron. So I haven't tested this one yet, but all the software and all the ingenious AI stabilization and stuff is applicable here as well. Same specs. It's got 4 gigs of RAM instead of 6. It's got an IPS panel with a notch instead of an OLED panel. Mm-hmm. 1080p as well. Smaller battery, 3400 milliamps. So it's much cheaper, something like this I think is £799.
The Pro.
The Pro, which I don't know what that equates to exactly. Probably $1,000. And then this one is about £200 cheaper. So the 20 might be the one to get if you're on a budget and you want to buy something gray market. But I'm very impressed.
On a budget, with these. Something that costs $800. On a budget.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you want the goodness of the P20, you want to save some money.
Right.
Ultimately, look, they're really impressive. I've only had them for a few days. That's why you don't see a lot of photos yet, because I literally unpacked them over the weekend.
Yeah.
The negatives on this phone is what's always kind of plagued Huawei, which is it's heavily skinned compared to what we are used to. Mm. It's not as heavily skinned as their purely Chinese phones, which are insane, that look like iPhone and behave like iPhones. Mm-hmm. But I put Google Play Now Launcher on there. Google Now Launcher, I mean, on there because I kind of like it. I could put the Pixel Launcher. So this is running Android 8.1, both of them, which is nice. But, you know, with this heavy skinning, it's just kind of like, ugh. So it's okay if you put another launcher. Like, it's not, like, terrible, terrible. It's like basically like a Galaxy or an LG phone. Once you remove, you put your own launcher on it, you're in business.
Right.
But I would say that, you know it's not going to get the updates. Not quite to the level we're used to. And that's kind of where it falls apart.
That's the big
challenge. In every other way, though, I mean, wow. You know, the performance
Huawei.
Of that phone. Huawei. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I mean, the performance and the camera on this is really like, I think this shows that, you know, potentially what we could see Google do for the Pixel 3 in terms of imaging, right? You don't need all these cameras to
Google's already also doing a lot of AI-ish stuff.
But this low-light
mode,
zoom is enhanced, nobody's made a phone where you can take a 4-second exposure handheld that's not a blurry
mess. That's pretty impressive. Right? I really like that.
That needs to happen on the Pixel 3. That is a new standard. Like, basically, that's the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, who needs to carry a tripod around? Like, you don't do that. So there you go. That's my take on the P20, P20 Pro.
Fantastic take.
They're pretty awesome.
And I got to say, from a design perspective,
really nice.
Holding it is really nice in hand.
If you want to bring it up real quick again, there's a really nice little red accent on the power button, which I love. I don't know if you can see it there.
Well, yeah, I see
it. A little red accent.
Nice.
I mean, it's fingerprint magnets, though. Look at this.
Yes. Ugh. But aren't they all when you've got that nice glossy back?
I got some cases for them to fix that.
There you go. That's all you really need.
So this is the irony. You cannot buy this phone in the U.S. Mm-hmm. at all. I mean, gray market, you can import it. But you can buy all the cases for it you want on Amazon all day long.
If you bought like 20 cases, is it anything close to having the real thing if you have 20 of the cases that fit it? I don't know.
I don't
Probably
know.
Not.
Maybe.
No, I think the answer is no.
Are you delusional?
Maybe here's another phone. No, I think you can get this phone in the U.S. I just don't know if many people will. Yes, we're ribbing
this?
On Sony. Ron, take it away.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So our good friends at Sony. So Sony announced their new flagship, the Xperia ZX2 Premium. All right, another phone I'll never see in the wild. Although I'm hearing reports of people seeing Sony phones in the wild. The 5.8-inch 4K HDR LCD with a 16:9 aspect ratio, running a Snapdragon 845 with 6 gig of RAM, 64 gig of storage, micro SD card slot, 3,500 milliamp battery, running Android 8.0 Oreo with dual rear facing 9 megapixel and 12 megapixel cameras and a 13 megapixel front facing camera. The camera has super slow-mo with 960 frame per second video, and it features the world's highest ISO. I'm going to screw up the number, but 12,800 or 12800 sensitivity for video recording in a smartphone. It's got IP68 key. I always screw that up. Charging. No price is announced yet. Last year's model was around $700, so you got to assume they're coming similar to that. And friend of the show, Ron Amadeo at Ars Technica, took Sony to task for its dated bezel design in front of the phone. So good job, Ron, on taking them to task.
Yeah, the second photo on the article, if you go to the carousel and pull up the second the second photo there, the comparison of 2013 to 2018. And yeah, I mean they're so similar.
Well, no, hold on, Jason. Hold on. They moved the Sony logo from the top to the bottom.
Oh.
And I'm sure that took a lot. That took a lot to do that. But
I mean, hey, it's a design that apparently works well enough for Sony that they don't feel like they need to change it.
No. Yeah. I mean, look, I just want to point out that when I was at MWC, they didn't talk about the premium model of this of the ZX2. But they hinted at it very heavily by letting us see what could be done with two cameras for that super low ISO or high ISO, low light imaging.
Okay.
So we saw it in a demo of it before the phone was announced, basically. And I knew something was coming from Sony with this camera system. And it's interesting, the parallel between the P20, because the P20 goes down to, like, you know, 5-digit ISOs as well. So I think that's the next. That's why, you know, I think with the Pixel 3, it's the next thing. That and stability, you know, the video stabilization of the P20 beats the Pixel 2 video stabilization with this AI. Mm-hmm. It predicts better when you start moving. You know how the Pixel 2 kind of gets a little jerky when you start moving?
Yep.
But it's pretty good otherwise. They solved that. So I think we're going to see. I have a lot of hope with the Pixel 3 and imaging. I think there's so much more that can be done in computational photography. And I think we're going to see some of that on this Sony phone as well.
Well, Sony just cameras, you know, their camera technology and smartphones in general, in some ways, seems to be setting some trends, right? Like, their cameras are really good. That super slow-mo feature is hitting more phones. And when you actually play around with it, like, you know, when I first played around with it, I was ready to just be like, this is so useless, you know, but it's actually really cool.
There's only three manufacturers that do that super slow, right? There's Sony, was the first, and they're doing it again with this phone. And then there is Samsung, and then there's
But Samsung's using the Sony.
Yeah, and Huawei system. Does it, F960. And so I think it's interesting that, you know, these are the three big players when it comes to imaging, and Sony was only able to do this on the premium, this super high ISO, low light, by adding a monochrome sensor. Mm-hmm. So they're doing what Huawei did, basically. Yeah. It's interesting how everybody's converging in the same direction.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, what tricks can we pull off, right?
Well, good. They continue to solve the problems that have plagued smartphone camera photography.
But they're doing it not necessarily with super fancy hardware. Like, they're doing it with AI, which
on its surface, I would be very skeptical about, but it seems to prove itself.
They're definitely throwing more cameras and hardware at the problem, but not, like, the hardware itself is not that fancy. It's just, you know, the computational aspects that are fancy.
You can do a whole lot more computationally if you have those extra cameras.
Honestly.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then finally, if you're Samsung, or let's take a step back. If you're a person who wants less out of your phone, then Samsung has you covered.
The J2 Pro.
The Galaxy J2 Pro. It's a smartphone with a touchscreen. You can install apps, all that kind of stuff. Well, I don't know if you can install apps because there's no cellular connectivity.
Yes, you can sideload them.
Whatsoever. So I don't know. Saying that there's no cellular connectivity tells me that there's probably Wi-Fi, but there's no cellular.
No, there's no Wi-Fi on it.
So nothing. So what's
the point?
But then you see the layout and there's apps on it.
So here's the thing.
You can only use the pre-installed apps.
Or wait. Sideload is one option. The other option is Bluetooth tethering.
Okay.
The third option, I assume it has Bluetooth. The third option, there's a third option. And that is to use an Ethernet adapter that will plug into the USB port.
Okay, who's going to do that?
Hey, I did that at Google
I'm sure you do.
I did a video. You know, remember how the press
I'm not surprised.
The press booths or whatever, cubbies, whatever, had Ethernet. So I was like, oh, I have a USB-C Ethernet adapter here. I plug that in, and my, you know, like gigabits performance. I had like super HD video coming out of my phone live. It was awesome.
So they say, Samsung says this is geared for students in the sense that it's right? to allow for better focus on learning, so you aren't distracted by your phone. Like, you can still have a smartphone, but only for the calling and, you know, very limited use cases of it, basically. Also touted it as good for seniors, which I can't really tell why. But
I don't want the internet.
I mean, that might be their rationale. It can make calls, texts, photos, videos. Apps can run in offline mode, kind of like a portable media player, let's say. But, you know.
You know that phone's not going to get updates.
I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Sorry.
Probably not. Probably not. Yeah. So 185 around those parts in South Korea.
So strange. Oof.
All right. This thing would never fly here.
Weird. No, well, it's not going to be here. It's not going to fly here.
Listen, with their market share in Samsung in that region, they can get away with something like this, I think. So,
yeah.
All right, one more. We got another email from Zeke who wrote in. Thanks, Zeke. And he says, I heard you all talking about the current music services don't seem to make good playlists and don't seem to know you. That's the reason I think I'm one of the few that still uses Pandora's premium subscription, which lets you play any song and make a playlist like Apple Music and Spotify, but their stations are individually independent of other stations. Pandora's formula still seems to work, and I love it for discovering new music and listening to old stuff. Plus, you can view all your thumbs up because they put in your thumbs up playlist automatically. I think Pandora is the most underrated music service, and I never hear about it. And Zeke, you're totally right, and we even talked about that on last week. We mentioned it, that Pandora's been around for the longest, right? And they've got the most amount of data in terms of recommendations and thumbs ups and likes and stuff like that, that I bet you if you commit to Pandora, the results you'll get will be way better than the other platforms. And I think Pandora definitely is woefully underrated, especially with that premium version. So yeah. I don't know. Miriam, do you still use Pandora at all? What is your music app of choice, Miriam?
Pan who? What? Just kidding. I'm just being a troublemaker. No, Pandora, I used it early in the early days. I think it's, you know, it was good then. I honestly use Google Play Music. Just, you know, for me, I'm not one of those people who likes to just randomly listen to auto-generated playlists or DJ curated.
Yeah, right.
I just like, I'm old. I like to listen to albums.
You know? Like the thing that you're looking for.
Yeah. Like I have very few, you know, I've got a few mix playlists that if I put together a mixtape. But mostly I'm listening to albums, and so that's good because with Play Music, a lot of the albums are already there, and the other ones I can just upload, right, which I have. So I don't know. I'm not a good use case is what I'm saying. For Spotify, I'm not the Spotify and Pandora customer.
Yeah,
I'm much more of a Google Play Music or Apple Music or customer. I don't know about Amazon Music because I don't know. It seems a bit weird to me.
I mean, even back in the day when Pandora was one of the only games in town, I wasn't really a Pandora user. I don't know why.
I tried.
I never really got into it.
I remember sitting at my desk at Revision 3 and saying, I'm going to use Pandora and trying to do the thumbs up and stuff like that. And I just, because the premium, that's the biggest problem. Because Pandora was the radio model and you couldn't control what the next song was. All you could do was just say skip. It turned me off because you want that on demand. They've added that on demand. And so now you can have that plus the power of their recommendations if you stuck with them. But I just never stuck with them. So that's the biggest problem with it.
Yeah.
Sean's
old school in chat. Sean still likes FM or frequency modulation.
You know, honestly, if I'm going to listen to pre-made mixes, I'm much more likely to listen to shoutcast radio stations using TuneIn Radio or using
Winamp.
Winamp if I'm on a PC, Totally. You know what I'm talking about. Like, we're totally showing our age right now. You realize that the young kids today have no idea what we're talking about. Right? You know that,
Win what? What is Windows?
Winamp was the best.
Yeah.
The skins. Remember the Winamp skins?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Wasted many hours.
I had my Star Trek Elcars, the Next Generation skin. That was great.
Winamp was awesome. It was an awesome app. And speaking of, let's talk about some apps. So
So change is afoot. The local Circle K. No, wait. Sorry, not Circle K. It's Gmail. You remember that movie, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. this could be a spoiler alert for Google I.O., but it looks like Google's Gmail app might be getting ready for a big makeover. The early adopter program for G Suite admins are set to get invited to the refresh in the coming weeks, according to Google. Android Police received tons of screenshots for the web app version, but I mean, a lot of these are going to end up in the Android app. Elements of the kind of new material design approach that I'm sure we're going to hear about more at Google I.O., this kind of refreshed, rounded corners.
It's going to be so minimalistic, they're going to get rid of Gmail.
Material design is going to be so minimalistic, it's going to be nothing but a white page.
That's right. And then, you know, you can go to Yahoo Mail instead if you don't like it.
Yes, if you actually want your email, which some days I don't want my email, so that actually makes a lot of sense. But honestly, if I don't want email, Yahoo Mail is not where I go. That's where all my spam goes. Elements in the new email or of the new material design approach, very bubbly, integrating plugins for things like Keep and Calendar, so you might see some refreshes around that. Also hints at Tasks. Remember Tasks?
Oh, yeah.
Being
yeah,
overhauled yeah. and included. Maybe there will be a Tasks app. I'm not really quite sure. It's expected to include snoozing, similar to what you have in Inbox. Smart Reply, similar to what you have in Inbox. Native offline support. Actually, I don't know if that's in Inbox, but Russell Hawley at Android Central is saying it sure looks like Google is about to kill Inbox because they're moving all these features
to
over.
Me. I mean, look, go on, Ron.
I was going to say I had the same thought when I got this as an owner of several domains that have Google apps installed and part of the early adopter program. I got the email. I was like, ooh, this is exciting. Finally, they're updating Gmail, which say what you will about the Android app. I feel like the web app is way overdue for a refresh. Yes. And I'm glad they're finally catching up on it. And my first immediate thought was, oh, well, there goes Inbox. But then I was like, well, does it? Or is Inbox really just the bleeding edge? And will Inbox continue to get the innovations where they can gather user data and then they apply whatever they think is good enough for mass adoption to Gmail updates? You know, does Inbox become the sandbox for real, kind of diehard people who want to, the cutting edge of what email applications could be? Sure. That's I'd rather see that happen. So.
Yeah, I think you get a point. It's possible. I mean, also possible, like a lot of Google apps, that they're going to let it linger in the App Store for decades.
Yeah.
You remember how long it took for Google Voice to get updated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and now it's a pretty regular occurrence.
Pretty like, nice. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. I think, I tried using Inbox when it first came out. I was like, oh, maybe this is the future of email. And I guess my workflow, it just didn't work with my workflow and my habits, I couldn't psychologically switch over.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I appreciated what they were trying to do, I'm much more excited about them rolling in some of the features like snoozing from Inbox into Gmail.
Which is really nice.
Snoozing is so necessary in Gmail right now. Yeah.
There's also going to be some new mode called confidential mode.
Yeah.
And it's going to have a bunch of security features. Well, check this out. This is interesting. It prevents it. So some of the features anyways, it will prevent the forwarding of certain emails. It will restrict copy, download, print functions based on how restricted you want an email to be. It can require two-factor authentication in order to open an email. And you can also set expiration dates on emails. So obviously this is only really helpful if you're a Gmail user emailing a Gmail user. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming because it's Gmail, maybe they would have some sort of, reverse lookup to know that the person you're typing out an email to is on Gmail. So those features surface themselves. That's just a guess. Mm-hmm. But that's nice, right? More security features.
Absolutely.
I don't know what stops someone from taking a picture of their screen when they want to copy something, but
I mean, it would be certainly nice to have like a dummy Gmail mode. Like what I mean by that is for people like your grandparents, so they don't open attachments ever. You know what I'm saying? Like it's all contained.
So that it emails, it gives you a notification on your phone.
That's right.
When they want to open an attachment so you could approve
and at least the web version of Gmail has all these preview, you can watch, you can look at PDFs, you can look at images. You're not really leaving Gmail. They just pop them up when you click on them.
Uh-huh.
And they do a virus scan. You saw that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I want to see that, but I want to see that go beyond that, like a mode where it's like, oh, you're trying to download an EXE? tough luck, not happening.
It's a bad idea. Initiating immediate chat with Miriam.
That's right.
What are you doing?
Oh, that would be a nightmare. Can you imagine? All our parents would be after us.
Oh, man.
For IT.
But you're protecting them, see?
I know, but I set up a new phone for my mom when I was there in France just after MWC. I got her a Honor 9 Lite mm-hmm. or 8 Lite. Nine Lite. And you know, I set it up basically just Google Apps, removed all the built-in, like, you know, carrier and other apps.
Yep.
Just made it super clean. And that way, in the future, it doesn't matter what phone she updates to next, right? She came from a Samsung. It'll behave and be all pure Android. You know what I'm mm-hmm, saying? Because mm-hmm. that way, she will never ask me, like, what's happening? It looks so different. But yeah, she called me for at least a week or two after that. Like, what? How do I do this? And I'm like, oh.
you did her a favor.
She was used to the
signed up for.
The text app and the dialer from Samsung. She wasn't used to the text messages, which I put on there for her texts, right?
Right.
So she didn't know how to do some stuff.
Yeah.
Family tech support. The biggest role we play is tech people.
It's important. I think it's so important. True, I think this is how we show our love to our parents.
Sure.
Family,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Oh, man. Yep. All right. Well, we could show more love to our parents by getting them a Google AI Yourself project.
I don't think that works, Rod.
I know. So Google published a new app for Google IE or AI Yourself, A-I-Y, IE, IE. So Google IE projects. So along with it, with an update to their voice and vision kits with clearer instructions, the companion app and all parts in a single box. So now includes a Pi Zero WH inbox along with a pre-provisioned SD card.
Oh, nice.
That means no need to download and flash the image on your own. And you can find this actually in Target stores this month, which is really exciting. These are really neat kind of little projects that you can do with the Google AI Yourself kit. So
go AI Yourself.
You should change the title of the podcast to Wow AI.
Wow.
Wow
AI.
Wow AI.
Wow AI.
It just keeps getting more and more complex. I love that Google is doing this because it really, I mean, especially right now in the modern kind of tech dialogue, artificial intelligence is such an overused phrase.
Oh, God.
You know, and it's everything. It's the solution to everything. But yet again, you know, here's a kit made out of cardboard. Google's good at this. Taking something that's supposedly very complex and going, yeah, we'll check it out. We can put this in cardboard and you can do something, you know, for not very much money and get to experimenting with it.
I think it's cool.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, hopefully they have a booth at Maker Faire later in May where they show the stuff in person.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
A couple of quick emails before we get to the arena. Sean wrote in to say on the last episodes, you guys did a great job of covering the selection of music services for Android. Thank you. One thing you did not cover when discussing the different options in these services was explicit content or language filtering. As a parent, this is a must-have for me. When driving to work, explicit language is not a big deal, but on long road trips with the family, I need to have the radio version of a song or the song to be filtered out if explicit language is used. Out of the services you reviewed, I have only used Google Play Music, Pandora, and Spotify. I like Spotify, but filtering is not provided, so it's a no-go. Google Play Music has the option, but surprisingly does a bad job of moderating the songs that are played, allowing explicit language to slip through. I personally have noticed that a few times. It's not rampant in my experience, but it's definitely there. Pandora does a remarkable job with this, in my experience, and is the service I use the most because I can trust the content that's going to be played to not have explicit language. So that's a really good tip for parents who are looking for a service. Like, I'm surprised that hasn't been bolstered up on these services more because there are a lot of parents and, you know, their kids listen to the music services too.
That's because people don't give a Sorry, I had to do it.
Some people don't.
No, I know.
Some people do.
I totally get it. I think you're actually right. I think I'm surprised that it's taken this long for that to be a thing.
I mean, because it's tracked. Like, it's easy, I assume, from a technical level to know, you know, I'm sure these songs are tagged in a certain way that says explicit or not.
You know,
so, okay.
What I'm actually surprised about, on an aside, you know, I do some YouTube videos on my own channel to support my podcast, and then, you know, on unboxings and reviews and stuff. And sometimes I swear, come on, I'm totally swear crazy. And I wish Google, like, my channel is set to, like, basically be PG-13 by default. And I don't want to have to bleep everything because a lot of it is live video. Mm. And I just wish Google would auto bleep for you. Like, you know, they I mean, I know Facebook detects when you swear in videos you upload and doesn't let you upload them.
Oh, what? Really?
Well, it lets you upload them, but doesn't let you add them as, like, embed them in the comments or in your posts.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
so, I mean, it depends on your privacy settings. But the thing that's interesting is that if they can do it, like, Google should just auto-bleep. Like, you have a checkbox that says, please auto-bleep me. Can you imagine how awesome that would be?
That would be great.
I know.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Auto-bleep.
Real quick, also, Keith, I want to get this in here because we talk so little about Amazon Music. Keith wrote in to say, one, what Ron described was correct, but was for those who have only Amazon Prime. However, there are actually two levels of Amazon's music service: Prime Music, which is included in Amazon Prime subscription, and Amazon Music Unlimited, which is $7.99 a month. Two, the library for the additional Amazon Music Unlimited is the more robust version. Obviously, you're paying for it. Prime Music is the 2 million number you saw, while Music Unlimited is the tens of millions. And three, he says, the app includes lyrics like was touted on the very next app, Deezer. Amazon actually calls it X-ray lyrics to fit with their X-ray, like when you watch a movie and want to know who that actor is. And we had a couple of people that wrote in to say, oh, Amazon has lyrics embedded too. It's called X-ray.
Yeah, and that's neat. And the thing was is that I went into Amazon, like, I researched this, and I just saw so much different, you know, kind of conflicting specifications around Prime Music versus Amazon Music Unlimited, which why they have two products is beyond me, right? Yeah. And why one product only has 2 million, it's crazy. So I'm glad he wrote in with this clarification, and it's neat to know that. And I forgot about the X-ray piece, so thank you for that.
And especially when, as a Prime member, we're used to having access to the Prime Video, which is everything that they have, you know, in their Prime Video library. So then it's easy to take that over to music and think you get the same in music, that what you get as a Prime subscriber for their music service is what they have. But then, for some reason, they have the broader music subscription service that you can pay extra for.
It's just a bit of a mess on Amazon, honestly, I think. Yeah. And it's not just Amazon. I think, in general, content delivery is a mess. Like, television is even worse. But I think, like, for me, as an Amazon Prime customer, you know, I'm paying extra for Audible, for example, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, why is this not bundled in some way? Why isn't there some sort of discount where I can get a Music Unlimited point, Prime and Audible as one package for so much a month?
Yeah, right.
Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like,
pack things on, get a certain percentage off of. Yeah,
I don't know. It's just complicated features. Because, yeah, I wish it was simpler because people don't really understand it.
Yeah,
and they don't want to learn.
All right, I think we have reached that point in the show. In fact, I know we have because I've just decided it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last week's poll, twit.to/AAApoll364. You voted and we listened. Your favorite app was Music Match. Ron Bravo.
Very cool.
Very good. People want their lyrics. And actually, I mean, honestly, Music Match does a great job of surfacing the lyrics in a kind of a floating sort of way.
The combination of the UI and the just the way the app was designed and the functionality and the options, it was just – I was really impressed by that app. It was very cool, so I'm glad it won. So what that gives us with those results through 15 weeks
Second. Hold on. Second place, Music Mate, 28%. Third place, Digitally Imported, 27%. There you go.
Sorry. And who was who on that?
I was Music Mate, so I was second, and Flow was third with Digitally Imported. But, man, it was close there.
With that, Jason, you and Flow are both now tied for last place with 32 points.
All right.
So that balanced things out. I was able to pass the guests. So now guests are in second place with 41 points. And I'm sitting pretty in first place with 42 points. So I'm 1 point ahead of the guests. So Miriam, no pressure. Jason, you are 10 points behind the leader. So you got some catching up to do. But the great thing is you come in first 2 weeks in a row, you're right there.
I know.
So it's still doable.
As you were reading this, I was just thinking to myself, I'm so happy that we still do this.
Because the evolution.
It makes me so happy to see that after all these years, we're still like battling it out in the arena. Checking in on the scores week after week. Like, I love that that's a part of this show.
It's good stuff.
It is. All right. So, Ron, you won, so you go last.
All right.
I lost of the returning folks anyways, so I go first. And I have to thank a listener, Evan. I believe Evan tweeted this. I can't remember if I got it in an email or tweet. But anyways, Evan sent this to me. It's tied in with the music theme from last week, which I think it's pretty hilarious. I was looking at last week's poll, and down at the very bottom from a gentleman named Randy, the comment is, can we have no music or audio talk this week? I'm sorry to say, Randy, we will be disappointing you and already probably have. My app is Radio with many O's at the end. Radio!
Woo.
And the idea, it's a free app. The idea of this app, which I should also mention, has not been updated, I think, since 2016. So it's a little behind on updates. But I think the idea of this is so great that I had to do it. So this is kind of the walkthrough. You pick a country. You pick a decade. You select your mood. Are you in the mood for something slow, something fast, something weird, or all of the above? And then you end up on a playlist. So you've got this little toggle down here to select your decade, right? And let's go weird. I'm not sure what taxi is. We'll play around with that in a second. You got a map of the world, so I can go to the US 1980, and it's pulls up a Scarface song from the Scarface soundtrack. I could go ahead and take weird and fast off, and I don't know what I'm going to end up with here. Is that 1980? Yeah, 1980. Okay.
What is it?
I'm not sure. Oh, I see. It's Pink Floyd, Money, Goody Goody Edit, published 1980. So the catalog is deep in radio.
This is good.
So it's like a decade or a time frame browser for music. So if you're in the mood for like jumping back into the 1940s and finding like what was big back in the 1940s, if I can get there. And let's say over here,
Russia,
I don't know. I'm just, maybe not Russia. How about China? Sure. Apparently Xuxian, I probably mispronounced that, but it just jumps right to it. And it loads up a playlist that matches those characteristics. I guess you can find some song information.
That is kind of perhaps incredibly awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. We'll go, how about we jump to Australia and see what was big in Australia in 1940. Well, of course, it's Tex Morton, Freight Train Yodel.
Of course.
Oh, boy.
I like that. I'm going to like it. Oh, I guess I got to log
this
in.
This is really good.
It's fun. It's just a fun kind of to jump around and kind of see Canada. Canada in the 60s, I heard it was going off in the 60s. So let's go there and see in Canada in the 60s. And you have Galt McDermott. Coffee cold.
Try 70s, you'll get some Rush.
Probably so.
Jeez.
Today is song so yes. Let's see here. No, we got Valdi, rock and roll song, 1972. Huh. Anyways, it's called Radio with 5 O's. I'm going to pause it.
Radio.
And what does taxi do? Select multiple countries and decades on the map and timeline to create your very own musical trip. Oh, okay. So you could select multiples basically through that with the taxi mode.
It can morph.
Yes. All right. It's called Radio and it's free. Thank you to Evan for sending this because I love that this is on my radar now.
That's, you're going to win, you bastard.
I don't know. You never know, Miriam. What you got? This is an app that I've heard about for years. We've never had it in the arena.
It's an app for nerdy car people.
Okay.
So if you own a car that's from 1995 or newer, and under the dash somewhere is a port called the ODB2 port, which is a onboard diagnostic 2 port, and standardized among manufacturers, and so far that at least basic engine management data is available there, enough to get all your emission control stuff checked by, say, the smog people in your state. For us, that's the cardboard here. But this app, Torque, is, if you can bring up the camera. So Torque is an app that interfaces via Bluetooth or USB with an ODB2 scanner, like a device that plugs into the port, and lets you actually look at that stuff on your phone and track it on your phone and log in on your phone. Of course, I don't have a car connected right now. As you can see, it's saying it's trying to connect to things. But it will show you things like you can scan for codes, which basically means that before you go for smog check, you can run this thing and it'll tell you if any of your sensors need replacing, if any issues on your car that would make you fail passing smog, and you would know for sure without spending money on nothing. Of course, nothing's going to happen if I tap search here. Then you can also have real-time controls where you can see a bunch of dials and gauges. So if you have an old Android tablet or something, you can have it set up on your dashboard like this, right? And you know those gauges that are missing in your car that you want? Things like vacuum, turbo boost if you have a turbo car, RPM if you don't have it. Like I have a really old, one of my old cars doesn't have an RPM meter. You can set them up here. And you can, like, it's all customizable. You can create more. You can have different sizes, dials that are, like, vertical, horizontal, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of, I'll show you really quick. I think if I hold down one of these, I think, see, you get all those layout options. And then, of course, it keeps going. You can look at a map view. It'll track your car over a certain distance so you can see how much fuel you've used, for example, because it'll look at how much fuel your injectors are firing into the cylinders. Test results will show you graphs of your test results. Of course, I don't have a connection right now to a device. And you can graph stuff, and you can export to Excel if you really want to be that eager. You can check on adapter status. There's also a whole bunch of plugins. So like if you have a specific car that has specific features that are accessible through ODB2, you can download plugins that support that and give you that extra information. It's very cool. And there's a free version, which gives you minimum basic functionality. And then there's a pay version for $4.99. I honestly recommend if you're a car person and you tinker with your own cars, just spend the $4.99. It's totally worth it. You'll also need an adapter. And I don't know if Victor has those two URLs I brought up ready to go, but Torque's website has a list of the adapters you need to get, and they're as cheap as like $15-$20 on Amazon.
Man, even cheaper. And, Bleak has one in the chat for $4.50.
Yeah, there you go. And so there is a if you bring up the other page, there is basically a standard ODB2 chipset that this
what
supports.
Is the other one? I
don't know if you put it in there, but I think it's like ELM 368 or whatever. I can't remember the chipset. Somebody in the chat room can jump in. But basically, 327. Thank you. ELM 327. Any adapter that has the ELM 327 chip in it, which is pretty much all the ones on eBay that are made in China for $10 to $20, will work with Torque. So in terms of hardware investment, it's really, really cheap. And then the software is $5 or free, depending on how much functionality you want. Honestly, it's really great if you have an older car that's not super old, where you do a lot of your own work and you need to be able to talk to the computer and see what the computer tells you, other than just show up a little orange check engine light.
Right.
Because you never know
what that means.
So with this, you can actually figure it out. But also, you know, you can have extra dials and gauges while you're driving. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what's cool is that so many of, I mean, pretty much all modern vehicles, and by modern, we're not
anything
even talking
from
that
90,
modern.
Yeah, 95 and up is the standard. Some cars
has this information.
Some cars before 95 also work because they were starting to implement it a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'll need a different physical adapter. There's some, like, depending on the manufacturer. Like, I have an old Volkswagen camper van that is pre-95, but it does support ODB.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you need to buy a little pigtail adapter because the connector wasn't standardized yet.
Right.
But the protocol works. And I can see very basic things like RPM and a bunch of other stuff. So it's pretty cool if you're tinkering with your car, if you want to diagnose problems with your car and not shoot in the dark. They also sell like dedicated standalone, no need an app, ODB2 devices. Like if you go to Pep Boys or whatever, mm-hmm. like for $9, you get the cheap ones that just show you the code number. But mm-hmm. they don't really, this gets into great detail about like, you know, looking at the stuff.
Well, and not only that, allows you to kind of do things with that
exactly.
data.
Exactly. The app is way better. Like if you're trying to keep track of your fuel consumption because you want to charge your boss, you know, like you're a freelance contractor or whatever, and you want to be able to charge your boss for the fuel you use, this app will let you track that. It's not just diagnostics. It's really cool.
Yeah. Very cool stuff.
Check it out.
Proposed this earlier via email, and at first I was like, man, I swear this has been in the arena.
Yeah, I thought it
hasn't, but
I mean, this app has been around a long time.
I know, and
like,
I could have sworn
it's one of those classics.
When I saw it wasn't there, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. This is like a must-have app if you're an automotive enthusiast.
Yep.
And here's the kicker. It even works with EVs, because EVs also put ODB2 port. They don't obviously have any data about smog and emissions, but they might if they're a hybrid. Mm-hmm. But they are generally, there's some data available there that can be like speed, battery level, all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah.
This also like lets you measure things like the normal battery in your car, you know, the one that all cars have, like how healthy is it? You can kind of have a quick look, because all that stuff is output through ODB.
Yep.
So yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's called Torque. There is a free version and also a $4.95 version to get the
$5 like pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
Pizza.
Gosh, like a slice of pizza. Ron, I have your app installed.
I'll
show it off.
So my app is basically a response to the state of the world that we're in, especially with all the Facebook stuff and permissions and privacy and stuff like that. Every now and then it's good to have an app that's so you take a time out and look at your phone and look at exactly what you're allowing those apps to do and exactly who's tracking you and what they might be doing with that information. It's called Exodus Privacy. And what Exodus Privacy does is it's a scanner app that will scan all of the apps on your phone, and it will tell you the number of permissions that have been asked for and granted by it, what it's exactly doing, and it'll also tell you what data trackers are being used by it, by what services and whatnot. Additionally, some apps have been analyzed by Exodus Privacy's service and can give you a full report on the web of that app so you can get all the information that you need. So here, Jason's looking at Discogs, great website, great app. Looks as if they have three trackers. They're using Google Crashlytics and Google Firebase Analytics and Flurry, which are all tools to track analytics. And you get 11 permission. You've given 11 permissions. It can have full network access. It's hard to read on the Skype.
Yeah,
though. But
there's
it explains,
11 of them.
Yeah, control vibration, takes pictures and videos. It tells you everything that this app has permissions for, what you've allowed it to do. So the combination of the permissions is great, because a lot of times you just say yes, and what did I allow that to do? And if I've got some lightweight app that I think, you know, doesn't need a lot of permissions and turns out it's accessing my text messages, that might be a cause for alarm for you. And you might want to look at whether you want to use that app. If you look at, like, for example, if you look at go to Hangouts, since that's a known one. And up on the top, you'll see that there is a report by Exodus Privacy. So if you tap on that link, it will go to the webpage with the report on that app. And it gives you a little more information about the APK, about the creator, the number of downloads, all that sort of stuff, as well as its secure fingerprint and all that fun stuff. So if you really, really want to go deep on the apps that are on your phone and know exactly what permissions they have and exactly how they're being tracked, this is a great way to do that, to get insight to that. So it's called Exodus Privacy. It's free in the Google Play Store. It is very interesting. Surprise, surprise, their website is exodusprivacy.eu.org. So it's I'm not surprised that someone in the EU is worried about, kind of playing that watchdog on apps in terms of what they're doing. Yeah, exactly.
Does it scan itself?
That's a good question.
Recursive loop there.
Yes.
It wasn't my question. It's somebody in the chat room. It's a good point, right?
Hearthstone, 8 trackers, 17 permissions.
Yeah. I mean,
you might be surprised how much of these trackers are embedded into the apps. Let's see here. Is Exodus. Exodus Privacy, 0 trackers, 2 permissions, full network access, and view network connection.
It's talking to China. Awesome. Just kidding.
So you can
always
find
jump right to China. DuckDuckGo, 4 permissions, no trackers. Well, that's good. Great app. It's called Exodus Privacy. It makes
information
very timely, Ron. Very timely.
Yeah, the timing was about right, and not surprised to come from the EU. So,
All right. So you can place your vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Radio? Is it Torque? Or Exodus Privacy? Go to twit.to/AAAPoll365. twit.to/AAAPoll365 and place your vote, and we will check in on it next week.
What's Victor going to pick?
Victor is circling. He's circling. I see a little bit of hesitancy, but no.
Oh.
He jumps on Exodus privacy.
Radio.
And with that, yeah, the radio has zero.
No,
torque,
I just gave you
40%.
One.
Oh, thank you.
How does it have zero? Do you want to refresh it?
And it supposedly refreshes as we go.
Yeah, right.
We'll see. We'll see.
Ah.
And it always changes.
See, look. You see how these don't match?
Yeah. Ah. I'm not entirely sure you're actually connected to the internet. Or that you're even alive right now.
Oh, boy.
Sitting next to me.
Oh, don't say that.
that's it. twit.to/AAAPoll365. And that is it. The show is a little trimmer. But you know what? We're starting a thing. We're trying to start. We should probably mention this. We're trying to start at 5 p.m. Pacific now. Because that's the time that we're supposed to start. It's 5 p.m. Pacific.
Yes.
But many times we start at 5:30. And there's really no reason for us not to. So that's what we're doing right now. We're getting an early start, which means we get an early end in the evening. If you're on podcasts, that won't make any difference to you. You're still going to get the same show, and we appreciate that you do. Miriam Jouar, thank you.
Thanks.
Always great getting you in the studio and getting you on
awesome.
The show.
Yeah, I love it. Ron, I'll have to have you on my podcast sometime soon.
Yeah, hit me up.
So I'll hit you up. And yeah. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's always lovely to come to the studio. I always make a day of it. My spouse is here too, and we drove up in the convertible along the coast. We stopped in Point Reyes and got some cheese because they might as well rename that town Cheese. You know? and it's just lovely. Today's a great day for that too. So I do love it. And thanks again. If you don't mind me plugging in the podcast, you got the update down there. Awesome. MobileTechPodcast.com. Go there, subscribe, and check it out. If you're on Pocket Cast, search for that and plus my handle, Tank Girl, TNKGRL, because there's a lot of Mobile Tech podcasts, it turns out, on Pocket Cast. if you search for Tank Girl, you'll find me or Mobile Tech Podcast and Tank Girl. And then on iTunes, God forbid if you're on iTunes, you'll just find me by Googling or typing Mobile Tech Podcast, Googling, searching, whatever.
Whatever they call it on iTunes.
Do they Google on iTunes? Is that allowed?
I don't know. I think it's just search. I think it's just search is the blanket term.
All right.
That works for them all. Miriam, thank you. This is a pleasure.
Thank you.
Get you back soon. Ron, what about you? What's going on?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at RonXO, where I am fully into the baseball season. So I apologize if you're not a baseball fan. But I'm pretty sure this time next week I'll be telling you about a new project because I think we're getting ready to unveil it. So a little teaser next weekend, I'll be telling you about a little fun little hardware project I've been working on. So,
I can't wait. I can't wait, man. That's so exciting.
Stay tuned.
So cool. Victor, thank you, sir. Appreciate all your hard work.
No problem. I just want to say also, right after I did that bumper that referenced wrestling, Burke put in the chat, he said Victor 7.85. That's totally wrong. It should be Victor 316. That's for you wrestling fans. Look it up.
I don't know. Email me. Those of you who understand the reference, email AAA@twit.tv and explain it to me so I don't have to ask Victor what he's talking about. And then we'll read it next week on the show. Thank you, Victor. Love having you along. As for me, I mean, I do lots of shows in the network. Tech News Weekly this weekend. I'm actually doing new screensavers with Megan Maroney. Leo and Lisa are out of town for the next 3 weeks on their vacation. So we're going to be filling in. I'm going to be doing a couple of weeks of This Week in Google. I've got Triangulation this Friday, talking to the founder of Snopes. It's I'm going to be busy, but fun busy. So you'll find me all over the network. I should also mention that those of you back to the Yellow Gold Kickstarter should have an update in your email box this morning. The album, the digital version of it, is yours. The CDs are on their way. Yes, CDs. People still get CDs. Go figure. You'll get those in a couple of days, probably. For the rest of you that didn't do the Kickstarter, I also announced that May 17th is the kind of public version of it. So it'll appear in Spotify and Google Play Music, all the different places. Hopefully I can time it so that it appears there on May 17th. But you can find more information if you want by going to yellowgoldmusic.com. And it has the kind of the artwork that Scott Johnson and Ben Minter collaborated on. and as the background, and I'm just really happy to finally be able to put
awesome.
This in the rearview mirror.
Do you have it on tape too?
No, but I did consider it as a stretch goal.
It's
I was
awesome.
Like, you know, tapes are coming back. Maybe it should be a stretch goal. We didn't quite
get
there.
I think CDs are fun. Like, there's something about having a physical thing,
the
in
tangible
hand,
thing,
right?
I suppose. Yeah. Thank you, Ron. I'm stoked to finally.
To bring
I was so psyched to download that this morning. That was awesome. Nice. That was a great email to get. So
right on. Thanks.
To
man.
Bring up Burke again, you're gonna have to put it on mini disc for him.
Oh yeah.
Well, I have a mini disc player.
Me too.
And a blank, so I could actually.
I don't
do
think
that.
They know what we're talking about.
I could do it.
Mini discs
were great back in their time.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, that is it for this week's show. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us emails, AAA@twit.tv. We'd love your emails. Please send them. Twitter, we are at Android Show. We're on Reddit, twitaa.reddit.com. You can find all of the apps that we have ever shown off, this week included, in the arena at twit.to/Android apps. You can find our show notes and past episodes at really the only place you need to remember. That's twit.tv/AAA. Everything's up there, and it links to all of it. And if you want to watch live, you can do that every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific. We're going to try and start on time right now going forward at twit.tv/live. That's it. I think we're done. We're going to go listen to some mini discs. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everyone. Woo. See you later.
Bye.
Hi, Burke. Is that a mini disc player?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Player. There you go.
All right, Tasting Oreos this week, courtesy of a fan, actually, of the show, Anthony Kelly in Hong Kong, found these. I'm not sure if I saw these around Easter time in the stores. It's not actually a cookie, but it's another of Cadbury's. I feel like anytime Cadbury and Oreo do a collaborative effort, you're in for a treat. Literally, you're in for a treat. So thank you, Anthony, for sending these.
I just want to say that last time I was in Hong Kong was just before Halloween, and I picked up the most awesome Halloween candy.
Go ahead and throw that one over there.
It was amazing.
In Hong Kong? So
yeah.
Good.
Just before
good
Halloween.
Place for-
Like, I just went to, like, a market, like, okay. Like Petaluma Market equivalent, you know, just like some Whole Foods type thing.
Here you go.
And holy crap, the candy. Oh, that's not creepy at all.
The smallest hands in the world are taking these... eggs away, and that's okay. Because
so wait, how is that an Oreo?
Well, it's Oreo flavored.
This is really borderline.
This is borderline.
Oreo flavored is a stretch. I'll allow it because it's in the shape of an egg.
Well,
but
now let's see here. It might
it's
not
got
be
the
Oreo,
logo on it.
It might not be Oreo flavored. It doesn't actually say Oreo flavored.
No, it says Oreo on the front.
Oreo interiored.
Yeah.
What does it say in the front of the bag?
You know,
it said Oreo on the front of the bag.
I'm going to need to see a cross section after you bite into this, Jason.
This is impossible to open.
Yeah, it kind of is. And,
and
well,
messy.
That's a good sign of a chocolate egg is that you want to make sure the foil is tight on there.
All right, Cadbury egg, little Oreo inside. I'll go ahead
it's
and take
melting.
The bite.
Mmm.
Okay. There's your cross section.
So it looks like an Oreo inside of it, somewhat like an inverted Oreo, actually.
Yeah,
is that the cookie in the middle, or what's in the middle there?
I mean, you know what? Really,
there is
no cookie. I mean, maybe those pieces are like little cookie pieces. This is full on candy with an Oreo license.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the pants now.
The Cadbury chocolate with the Oreo embedded in the middle of it was great because that took the Oreo concept and added in Cadbury.
Yeah, there was.
This feels like you took Cadbury and encased it in Oreo flavoring.
Yeah, right. But. Burke's giving it a 10, so, you know, no matter how you slice it.
Wow, it's messy.
It is a little messy.
Here, you want some of this.
Yes, please.
I'm going to eat a bag of
chips. I mean, they're tasty. I have to put them on the same rating scale of all of the other Oreos that we've done. 1 through 10, what would you give this?
It's actually like a 7 or 8. I think it's pretty solid.
I think it's pretty solid, too. Yeah, I'd give it an 8. Burke gives it a 10, and there's plenty of people that want some. Although, be careful which one you get, because that one, some of them haven't survived the travels very well, and they're, like, leaking or something. I'm not really quite sure what's going on, but anyways.
Leaking?
Well, I mean, look at that. Like, it's like the cream filling.
Ooh, that's
melted
nasty.
A little bit or something. So maybe don't eat that one because it's poisonous. Yeah, but this weird
you
little
are
burnt
very
hand
lucky,
is
Ron, that very you're not here to see this leaking thing.
I'm yeah. sure. Yeah.
Anyways, Anthony, thank you, and everyone who sends us yummy things to taste on this show, we really appreciate it. 8 out of 10 for me on that one.